Hello and welcome to In the Hive. I'm Roger McDonough. Today on the program, we are talking about the plan of Utah's flagship university, the University of Utah, to reopen. Well, to sort of reopen anyway, this fall. The plan, as it currently stands, calls for a kind of a hybrid of in-person and online classes. Masks will be required. But what about what students do when they're not in class? And how is the university thinking about faculty safety? To learn more about the return to campus plan, I spoke via Zoom with Dr. Lori McDonald, Vice President for Student Affairs at the U, to hear about the decision to have a somewhat limited reopening of campus this fall. As it stands now, Utah's flagship university is planning on having in-person classes this fall, though things won't be the way that they used to be. Other universities around the nation are doing the same. Some, though, have decided not to hold in-person classes. I want to get to the plan the university has for the fall and the various guidelines that will be in place. But first, I'm hoping that you can talk a little bit about the decision to have in-person classes. How was that decision reached for the University of Utah?
Right. Well, all the decisions about this operation in such different times is ongoing with a lot of information and a lot of opinions. And we certainly are talking about a multitude of scenarios. So we're really trying to very thoughtfully modify how we teach, how we conduct research, how we engage our communities while managing this risk appropriately to promote everyone's health and well-being. And all the changes, the restrictions, the precautions that we're trying to take is really intended to provide as safe an environment as possible for us to allow some type of in-person college experience on a limited basis for the students who can and want to be on campus, while also providing some flexibility for those students who don't want to be on campus and have that engagement. You know, we're learning through all of this as a community that it has affected all of us very differently. And while I appreciate the sentiments about we're all in this together, I've also learned that what it means to be in this is so different for all of us, given different circumstances of our own health, of the health of our family and loved ones and people who we interact with. And so above all, we're trying to be prepared for multiple scenarios, provide lots of different options, because ultimately we know the importance of our students engaging in their studies, continuing to complete their degrees. The economic impact of this situation has made it even that much more important, I think, for our students to be able to finish their degree credentials and also to be part of these solutions, both from a health and science perspective and all the social science problems that we have with this. So that's ultimately our goal, is to provide some of that interaction. We know that curriculum can be modified in a variety of ways. We were able to do it at the end of spring semester and over summer. We also know that there's a lot of experiential learning, particularly in things like laboratories and artistic training, that is that much more challenging to put in an online format. Yeah. So that's why we're really trying to look at this with a multitude of solutions.
Well, a multitude of solutions, and it sounds a little bit like it can be a moving target because of, you know, it's hard to know exactly what the future will hold and what the fall will look like in terms of, you know, spread of the virus and so on and so forth. But at the moment, the plan is, as we said, for the university to hold some level of in-person classes, and there's hybrid courses and online courses. I'm just wondering if you can talk about the plan itself, the precautions the university is taking. Maybe the broad strokes overview, Dr. McDonald.
Well, I think broadly, we're approaching it from, number one, the communication and education about public health strategies is absolutely critical. We have a shared responsibility as a community to think about things like distancing and covering faces with masks or face coverings, and not coming to campus when you're ill and feeling like there's a culture that supports that, both as employees and as students. And certainly to increase hygiene, hand washing, and not touching our faces, and all of those types of things. And so part of the plan is literally that communication and education, signage, frequent communication. Let's delve into this and talk about how this impacts how we interact with each other and ways that we can support it to have that shared responsibility for our whole campus community. Although the impact of the virus and this disease may be very different for someone in a certain age category, we're a community of everyone. And you don't know who the person next to you, if they have are living with somebody with some vulnerable situations or something like that. So that is really key. The other component to our plan is about monitoring our community. Really everything from environmental testing and population querying and trying to see like where are outbreaks. We know there will be people who test positive for this. It's not a matter of if, it is when. And let's keep a pulse on that while also really identifying positive cases through self-reporting, through targeted testing. We are looking at testing all of our students who live into the residence halls. We've got students who come from all over, and including the Salt Lake City Valley, and that will be a good starting point. Just as we know statistically, there will be a high likelihood that there will be some students, even if they're asymptomatic, are testing positive for it. And that will immediately initiate our quarantining and isolation support services, including delivering food for those who are living there and helping support them get connected with their classes, even if they're not able to leave their room and that type of thing. And then lots of protection measures. That's increased cleaning everywhere, supplies of things like hand sanitizer, having our campus community wear face coverings in the classroom and doors where the possibility of distancing can always change given people's movements. We're looking at a lot of engineering controls, improving ventilation systems in all of our buildings and airflow and things like that. So we've also, for employees, those who need to isolate or quarantine because they've either tested positive or they've had a significant contact that has tested positive, we are actually allowing the use of administrative leave rather than vacation or sick time to really promote a culture of we really want to support you in following these guidelines. We will still promote remote work for many employees. And, you know, for our students, even those in person, we're finding that some of the innovations that we've made to delivering services through an online format have been really well received. Our counseling center was able to get up online with telemental health services, and we've seen a decrease in the no-show rate. And we're hearing from students like, I really like this. I can speak with my counselor in an appointment in a place where I'm comfortable. And I foresee that some of those options will continue long into the future, even after we get more to back to a normal situation. So lots of services still remote. We're trying, I think that we will see, you know, our library open perhaps different hours, perhaps sections closed off for a special cleaning. Our student life center, our Echo Student Life Center, where students get to work out. We're looking at some of those strategies that the community is using in terms of almost making a reservation for an hour to come in, closing it at certain times for some deep cleaning, really trying to, some equipment might not be available that's difficult to clean. Lots of those types of strategies.
I mean, it sounds like a significantly altered university experience one way or another, out of necessity. Fewer students, lots of mask wearing. You have these sort of behavioral requisites. I don't know if you would call them requisites. There are some universities say that they will have students sign, you know, contracts that say that they will adhere to certain rules. Is that something that the University of Utah will do?
We're approaching with this education. We are developing an online kind of a workshop course for students to kind of see all of this. They've heard it from multiple sources, but kind of here's some expectations. And we ask that basically they attest to having seen it and are actively agreeing to participate in this shared responsibility. But I wouldn't suggest that it's a contract.
We talked a lot about classrooms, and you mentioned the testing in dorm rooms, or for people who are living on, you know, in campus dorms.
I don't mean to interrupt you.
Oh, go ahead. That's
fine. I should add that we're also looking at what are some really good strategies we can have to have available testing for people who are symptomatic, or are identified that they had close contact with someone who tested positive, and what are ways that we can make that as accessible as possible on campus, and in our community to the students who live off campus.
I mean, does that just mean having a lot of tests on hand, in terms of accessibility? Are you stockpiling tests?
That's a good question. And that's actually, it's also closely following the developments in the testing process. As we all know, and I don't explain it, I don't have the medical terminology, but is it posterior or, you know, nasal swab? Now, that's the most dependable test, that's the most sensitive. And it requires somebody with the training, medical training, to get all the way back there. They have to be in full protective personal protective equipment. It takes a while. It's uncomfortable. And we are certainly very hopeful for the development of tests that may be a little less invasive, but still as reliable. And I know our ARUP laboratories are working round the clock on trying to come up with a version that would facilitate more testing readily available for people to either take their own swab or saliva or something like that, that would maybe make it a little bit easier to take the sample and perhaps even hopefully also speed up the test results, because that's important. You know, testing is a snapshot in time, and you could take the test and then get, you know,
the next day or an hour later, contract the virus.
So we're definitely looking at that, and very hopeful that in the coming weeks we'll have more information about some other possibilities for testing. And then it would be, okay, how can we make it readily available, have enough supply on hand?
I'm still thinking about that sort of social life aspect, that you have students who are in dorms and students who aren't in dorms, and then, you know, the idea that they might, despite having gone through the module online that tells them that they shouldn't do these things, that they might gather in parties, or, you know, how are you approaching the sort of social life safety of students?
This is absolutely on my mind as a student affairs professional and one who works with students, is, okay, we've got the strategies in place. It does take all of us to follow them diligently for them to work well. And there is a lot of skepticism about how this will work on a college campus. I've seen op-eds written in the New York Times about, oh, we can't expect students to follow this. And we are seeing from other campuses that do have an on-campus presence at the moment that there are often spikes of positive tests that can easily be traced to following a gathering of students, and whether it started out very small with the intention of distancing and then just grew and grew and grew, or whether that was the intention to begin with. We know that socialization is also part of the college experience. And I'm trying not to be skeptical. I am fearful. But what we are doing is really trying to engage students in this very issue. I had a long Zoom meeting with a number of student leaders last Thursday. And I posed that. I said, okay, do you think students will follow this? Maybe in classes, they're wearing their face coverings, they're doing all of the right things. What happens on Friday night at 8 p.m. when there's a desire to really connect? And some students were being honest, like, well, we think some students are going to follow it and others are not. And so I think we really need to have those discussions about what are ways to help facilitate socialization, to help facilitate meeting new people and sharing your experience that are safe. And how do we talk about this shared responsibility, that it's not just about ourselves, it's about our entire community? And then having, again, the mitigation strategies in place for when there are outbreaks, and enough support services to get us through that and manage those cases. But yes, if you hear perfect way to address that, I would really appreciate it because you would share it.
I mean, you're right. It is sort of, there's this, the balance that you're trying to deal with is the, both educationally and from the socialization perspective, is that it's not ideal to be doing things entirely remotely, be it learning or, you know, having that college experience, and at the same time having to, you know, sort through the pandemic.
Those things are part of our wellness as well.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, there's this pandemic wellness, but there's mental health. Socialization and support of family and friends is part of our lives. So you're right. It's a big balance.
Will faculty, those who are teaching courses, I read in the plan to return that faculty can, if somebody shows up and doesn't have a mask on, that they can cancel a class and that a student can be disciplined if they show up. And I know that there are some exceptions as well. I'm wondering to what extent faculty get to say whether or not they're teaching in-person classes. Do they have a choice in the matter, I guess?
Oh, good question. Yes, good question. So the overall approach was certainly to look at our class schedule and modify slightly some of the locations of the courses so that those that are in person could be spread out. Also to equip our classrooms with more technology for recording, to be able to put videos on Zoom and things like that. And then there was also an opportunity for faculty to request, and our staff, all of our employees, to request any temporary work adjustments that may be requests that are not necessarily like an accommodation under the Americans with Disabilities Act, but saying, I have this unique situation where I'm requesting this type of an adjustment where I only teach online classes, or I need some of these just bit of adjustments to what we would expect. And so those have been processed and they're working through it. And the attempt was to say, for those, these are the classes that we need to teach all online, to match those with faculty who want to teach all online. And those who really want to teach in person, to do the hybrid and the in-person. So it's a bit of a puzzle. And we are certainly trying to be equitable, fair, and balanced in the approach, but careful and compassionate. And again, we want all of our campus community to be healthy and engaged as much as they possibly can. And the face covering question is one I get the most from our faculty, is what happens if someone is not choosing to engage. And although it really, really is critical for our entire health of our community, we very much want to approach it with respect. And, you know, students forget things all the time. I forget things. I've gone out to the grocery store and been like, oh, I forgot my face covering. So we are going to try and have a number on hand for just being able to provide. We're trying to provide one for every student. We hope the order gets in before the fall classes start, to add to the personal supply. But talking to them about, well, what are your concerns about this, about wearing it? Because it could just be talking through from a health education perspective. It could be that there are other ways. You know, maybe this is someone who would rather engage in the online version than the in-person. But after some education and some respectful requests to comply, yes, there could potentially be disciplinary measures if it's someone who is really not going to follow the policies and procedures that are required to keep us all safer or safe as possible.
This is maybe a tough question to answer because it's, again, a sort of moving target question. But, you know, we've seen a recent surge of the virus in Utah. And just given that, would the U want to consider making any changes or adjustments to the plan to reopen that's in place right now, especially in terms of holding those face-to-face meetings, meaning some universities are going all online, which, again, I know isn't ideal from an educational standpoint. But if the case count significantly increases, if there are, you know, quote unquote, desperate times, do there need to be more desperate measures? Is there the option of not doing what you're planning on doing right now?
Absolutely. And that's that part of the multiple scenarios that we are planning on and preparing for. And I would suggest it's this constant modulation of our approach. And absolutely, this is why it is so important for us to work with local public health department guidelines, state guidelines, federal. We're constantly watching the trends in Utah. We happen to have an academic medical center right on our campus, which is so fortunate, but that's a big indicator for us is, our hospital and what they're experiencing and what their recommendations are. And we will need to pivot quickly, and we will not hesitate to transition if needed for the health and safety of our community. That being said, there are a lot of complexities to that. There is new guidance from the federal departments about some of the immigration exceptions that were given to visas in terms of all online education. So we will need to be very thoughtful and careful, but we will not hesitate to follow the needed, if there are indications that this is no longer safe to do despite precautions and changes, yes, we will absolutely pivot as needed. It won't be that we'll cancel classes altogether. Of course, we're here to provide this, but yes.
And that could even conceivably happen in the middle of the semester. Is that that kind of pivoting? I'm just thinking about if there's a substantial increase in cases after the fall semester starts.
And our hospitals are really, if there's not enough room there, absolutely. And, the plan, the shift to the schedule was that we would, hold classes until the Thanksgiving break. We know that that is a time when a lot of people travel, when they're going to spend a lot of time with others. And as we know that this is very much a traveling disease, we already put into the plan that the last week of courses would be completed after Thanksgiving, all remotely. And we'd all go online, and final exams would be given online in an attempt to try and help that, knowing that that's a travel time. But as you said, it could happen, something could happen with a significant outbreak in our community in October.
I've heard rumors just talking about the plan to end in, to have only online after Thanksgiving. Currently, there's the plan to have the vice presidential debate on campus. Is that going to be a period of break for students, or is that going to be, how does that work?
Thank you. That's actually another, that was going to be our fall break, and we are no longer having a fall break. We will be working through the whole semester again to promote staying here, get through the semester. But that week, knowing that there will be some restrictions to some of the buildings on campus because of the debate presence, that week will also be delivered online remotely, particularly for those courses that were given on our main campus that are impacted by those building restrictions.
Do you worry that some students, from Arizona or Nevada or, St. George might treat that as kind of a break and leave, go, do the sort of Thanksgiving thing and come back?
Certainly. And there's travel throughout the semester and weekends, things like that. Again, we're really hoping to educate our campus community about ways to try and be safe all along. But yes, absolutely. We are a community of adult learners.
Okay, so I want to turn to that rule from the Trump administration. The new rule from the Trump administration would bar foreign students from remaining in the country if the university they are attending isn't holding in-person classes this fall. And that's not the case for the University of Utah right now. As you said, that's a consideration. Things could change, though. MIT and Harvard are seeking a temporary restraining order to stop that rule from being enforced. But how will the rule, if it does stand, how will it affect international students at the University of Utah?
I do have to say at the onset, I am not an immigration expert or a policy expert. But from what I know, thankfully, we have our Office of International Student and Scholar Services are the experts, and they're looking very, very carefully at the guidance. And just broadly, there's always been some requirements for students to take some, to engage in a campus in person and perhaps some in under some circumstances, limitations on the number of online courses that one can take. And I'm sure someone else could explain a lot of the reasoning behind that. But with the pandemic, there were some exceptions made, knowing that like basically all of the country went all online for the end of spring and summer. And it's my understanding that what's happening is that those exceptions they're ended for fall. So what we want to do is really support our students, because truthfully, it's almost as if uncertainty is being piled upon uncertainty for these students, because there are already so many questions about travel restrictions and concerns about people at home all across the country and what's happening here. I mean, the United States is really the hotspot right now, or one of the main hotspots for this to happen. So what we want to do is fully support our students in saying, we will take a look at what these guidelines are. We will help interpret them. We are certainly going to follow them, even though we don't set them ourselves. And we are going to assist students very individually with those approaches. Most, about two-thirds of our international students are pursuing graduate degrees, and the other third are pursuing undergraduate degrees. And that those percentages change a little bit every year. But we are so fortunate to have our international students as part of our campus community. I mean, the experiences that all of our students bring together is part of the education, and that richness of having people from all over the world come together to solve these scholarly problems is absolutely critical to the experience. We've been talking about the college experience all along, and the presence of international students is a key part of it. And so we are always concerned about following those guidelines, but we really are hoping to always provide access to our education for the students, because we get so much from them too in their presence on campus.
The guidelines require them, right now as it stands, the university would have them register for at least, some portion of in-person coursework. Is that correct?
And it's my understanding hybrid is also that possibility.
It's half online, half off, half in-person. Yes. Just on the rule itself from the Trump administration, I know you're not an immigration expert, and neither am I for that matter, but in this challenge, the president of Harvard, again, one of the two universities filing in U.S. District Court to challenge this rule, says that the rule itself is the Trump administration trying to exert pressure on universities to hold in-person classes this fall. And, I don't know what the motivations are, and you obviously can't speak to that either, but in general, is the university feeling, undue pressure in any way to hold in-person classes by this rule or otherwise?
Well, I haven't read the court thing. I think the pressures of this time period with the pandemic are many, is all I would say. And again, we're hoping to meet our critical mission as a research university in teaching, in research and service, but just doing it in very different ways. And we know that that includes our international students, and we certainly are going to do everything we can to engage them safely and according to the regulations.
I mean, I guess the question, and I'll leave this topic in a second, but the question is sort of like, there's almost a political debate over the concept of reopening in general. I mean, you're making decisions based on the data available and the science, not on political pressures. Is that safe to say?
Yes, I would say safe to say we are absolutely doing that, knowing that we want to continue to provide opportunities for our students to finish their degrees, because no matter what, no matter how long this pandemic is with us, this is really, really important for our communities, for the economic well-being of our state. Higher education is a big part of that, but we are absolutely going to be following public health guidance to do what we can as safely as possible.
I'm wondering if you're seeing a lot of students asking for deferrals, or who are waiting and aren't going to come back this fall. Is that something you're seeing?
I would suggest that we are seeing a little bit of that. It's sometimes hard to quantify. Sometimes we try to compare, you know, our enrollment based on this time last year, and it's just been such a different year. We had to pause our registration for a while we were adjusting the schedule and trying to see if we could put classes in different places and things like that. So it's almost comparing apples to oranges. But we do know that a lot of students are asking those questions. What is it going to be like? What is this experience going to be like? Am I going to come from out of state and, you know, live in the residence hall and just sit in my room and take online courses? You know, and we definitely want to help them understand what type of an experience it will be. And they're weighing those decisions up until the very end, I'm sure. And there are so many different circumstances, both economically and from a health perspective, that we have had some students kind of defer their admission to either January or next year. And I very much respect that there are individual circumstances that contribute to those types of decisions. But
I mean, so much of the world is on hold right now. And
I know the frustration for, you know, parents who want to know exactly when is my student going to be tested? What is this going to be like? And we're still so much working out those plans and those strategies, and will throughout the whole semester and year, that I share in that frustration and I empathize, but we just sometimes don't have all the answers right off the bat.
Dr. Lori McDonald is Vice President for Student Affairs at the University of Utah. I really appreciate your taking the time.
Thank you.
And best of luck.
I will take it. Thank you.
I had to cut my conversation with the U of U's Lori McDonald short because we ran out of time. But we'll post the full version as a podcast at our website, kcpw.org, and available as well through whatever app you use to get podcasts. That does it for In the Hive from KCPW, a listener-supported, independent, local public radio resource. I'm Roger McDonough. Thanks very much for listening, and join us again next week.